Chapter 2. Trigger warnings. Once again, discussions and thoughts of suicide, grief, survivor guilt, discussion of canonical character death, the aftermath of the events of the Avengers, and general canon-appropriate violence. Lying was easy. Clint was always kind of ashamed of that. Not ashamed enough to stop doing it, but he knew on some level that it shouldn't be this easy to put on a false front, to slip a mask on that hid what he was thinking, what he was feeling, what he wanted, what he needed. He could create a persona and disappear into it, until it felt as natural as breathing, until he could almost forget that it was all a lie. It made undercover missions easy for him. He could hold cover better than most. When his life was at stake, he was almost flawless. He could survive because he could lie. He could hide, and no one would have the slightest idea that he was coming apart on the inside, that he was holding himself together by his fingernails and his teeth, that it was all he could do to sit here and not scream. He could sit in the strangest debrief of his life and act like nothing was wrong. Of course, it helped that no one was paying much attention to him. Thor's fist hit the table, and no one flinched, but it was a hard-won battle on all sides. "I will take him back to Asgard," he snarled, "and he will face the justice of our people." Nick Fury sipped his coffee. "Him and the Tesseract," he agreed. "Take them both and go. But it will be as soon as we can find..." Thor cut him off. The damage is another thing entirely." Nick set his cup down and stood, bracing his hands on the tabletop. "The damage isn't going anywhere. You want to make good on that? No one is objecting. But get the prisoner off this planet and do it as soon as possible." "You dare to order me," Thor breathed. "Not ordering, just explaining some facts. You want him? You need to get him clear of this planet now," Fury said, calm about it. "Right now, things are still so fucked up that I don't know if anyone in the High Command can find their asses with both hands and a map, but we are running on borrowed time. Sooner or later, they are going to come knocking, and they are going to want to put your boy in a very deep hole for a very long time." He straightened up and spread his hands wide. "What are you going to do? Fight every damn army that comes knocking? 'Cause let me tell you, there's a lot of them, and they'll all want that particular prize." "You overstep your place," Thor said, his voice a threatening rumble. Fury's head tipped to the side. "Is that right?" he asked. "As I see it, my place is between you and everyone who wants a piece of you. And let me tell you, that's a damn long list." Thor turned on him, and for an instant, Clint really thought he was going to take a swing. And for an even briefer second, he wondered what the fuck would happen then. But as quickly as the storm had come, it passed, and Thor slammed out of the room, his feet pounding on the floor hard enough to shake everything. Silence descended, and it wasn't a great silence. Fury was the only one who seemed unaffected, calmly gathering his things and moving toward the door. "Well then, guess we're done," he said, his tone offhand, and Clint wondered how the hell he did it. The door shut behind him, and for a moment, everyone else just sat there. "That could have gone worse," Bruce said, his arms crossed over his chest. His lips were twitching like he was trying to smile and failing at it, or like he was freaking out and trying to hide it. "Not really," Tony said. He was fiddling with something on his phone, his head down, his chair turned away from the table, his legs tossed out in front of him. "I mean, nobody died. That's a plus. But as meetings go..." He gave a slow, descending whistle. "Whew, I haven't been involved in one that bad since the tech crash of the mid-90s. He paused, his brows drawing in tight. "Who am I kidding? I was involved in one that bad last week. But I shouldn't be used as a barometer for these things." Rogers was staring at him, a faint expression of consternation on his face. "Do you ever listen to what you're saying?" he asked at last. Absolutely not. Tony slouched a little lower in his chair. I know it's all bullshit. No real point in listening to it. His heel rattled against the floor, and Banner rubbed his forehead. What was up with Big and Blonde, anyway? He didn't get to see Jane. Clint didn't realize he was speaking until the words had slipped out, and as every eye in the room swiveled in his direction, he bit back a mental curse. So much for staying invisible through this stupidity. With a force of will, he kept his face calm and still, a half-smirk on his lips, his arms draped over the arms of the chair. Nat's eyes narrowed, but she kept her mouth shut. Rogers was frowning, not an angry frown, but a concerned one. Jane? Dr. Jane Foster, the scientist he crashed into in New Mexico. She's been looking into the Einstein-Rosen bridge. Clint stopped, because Natasha and Rogers were just staring at him, their faces blank, and Stark and Banner looked far too interested, and he did not want to get involved with them. Instead, he quirked a smile. I was on guard duty down there for a while. Before, well... He stopped, his fingers rattling against his hip. It was as if he could feel the bones under his skin, loose, as if nothing held them together, as if the tendons and muscle were gone. Only the bones left beneath a thin veil of skin. Agent Coulson had her evacuated, Natasha said, drawing the attention of the rest of the room. When Loki reappeared, she was on a short list of protected subjects, and S.H.I.E.L.D. got her as far away as we could, fast, before Loki could get a bead on her. Thor was probably expecting to see her before he had to bolt, Clint continued. And now it's not happening. It sucks, but there it is. He spread his hands. Damage control's got a lot of collateral damage to control, after all. I doubt getting our favorite alien a date is anywhere on the list. Rogers sighed. Yeah, things don't always work out the way we want, do they? He stood. I'll see if he'll speak to me, at least a bit. Stark looked like he had something to say about that, but Banner caught his attention before he could. Banner leaned forward, speaking quietly, and Stark nodded, his fingers tapping against the tabletop. Natasha rolled to her feet. Barton? Clint shook his head. He had therapy, which she knew, judging by the sharp look she was giving her watch. Yeah, I know. He pushed himself to his feet. I've got an appointment, so I gotta go. Call me if there's anything else. With a faint smile, Rogers met his eyes. Thank you for coming in. Yeah, well, for a debrief, it was blessedly brief, Clint said, flashing him a grin as he tucked his hands in his pockets. He could hold it together a little while longer, just like being undercover, after all, even if the gun at the back of his neck was a little different here. He just had to hold his cover story. That was all that mattered. Natasha intended to follow him, he was sure of that, but Rogers caught her attention, and Clint was able to slip out the door unaccompanied. He didn't mind. He was kind of glad if he was being honest with himself. He needed a couple of minutes to pull himself together before he had to face down the joy that was therapy. His lips twitched in a humorless smile. Somehow, he didn't think that Dr. O'Brien would be quite so easily tricked by his facade. Of course, he was pretty sure he didn't care. Just another line item in his file. Just another mark on the checklist. The one that would eventually get him sidelined. It might come in handy for his trial, though. Hey, Barton! Clint slowed his steps, glancing back over his shoulder, as Stark jogged up beside him. His head was down over his phone, and his jaw and his neck were a mess. From this distance, Clint could see the damage, and he was impressed despite of himself. Stark must have been thrown around in that armor like a toy, but he gave no sign of it, his shoulders back, gaze clear. He moved like he was used to pain. This Dr. Foster, Stark continued without looking up, his fingers tapping out an insane rhythm on the clear interface of his phone. She'd know you? Clint dug his own hands in his pockets, ignoring the way his right hand twitched, the fingers flexing against the fabric. Yeah. You're sure? Clint felt a lopsided grin cross his face. Yeah. New Mexico. land of enchantment, and really batshit insane situations. Trust me, she'd know me. Stark glanced at him, and his eyes were very sharp. A flicker of a glance, and he looked away. Yeah, New Mexico. Coulson said that he was going to New Mexico. In his pockets, Clint's hands formed fists, muscles flexing so tight, it was like his own bones would shatter under the pressure. But his voice was light when he managed. Yeah, he did. Intersection of some stuff, I guess. You and Thor. He paused. Coulson liked you. They both stopped walking on the same step. Clint hadn't intended to do it, and judging by Stark's face, neither had he. For an instant, the man seemed to hang between rage and regret, the whites of his eyes visible around the irises, the color in his skin washing out, the shallow pallor replaced an instant later by a flush. No, he didn't, Stark said with a tight smile. But he really did, Clint said, and the words were calm and almost kind. He didn't know why he was saying it, but he couldn't seem to stop. Said you were a pain in the ass, so don't get me wrong. But he liked you. Stark's eyes snapped shut, his whole face working as he struggled with something. And then the storm passed, and he offered Clint a professionally smooth smile. I'm a very likable pain in the ass. Just ask my PR department. It's one of my few and undependable saving graces, he agreed. And his eyes were shuttered now. Blank. A mask with empty holes where the eyes should be. If I got this Doc Foster on the phone, you could talk her into coming back to New York, right? Probably, but Nat said they had her stuck in some shield. Stark waved him off, not the least bit impressed. Yeah, that's not the question. The question is, if I got her on the phone, can you get her to follow orders? Clint's eyes narrowed. Yes. Good. Catch. Stark flicked the phone in his direction, and Clint caught it out of force of habit. And he wasn't surprised that the single glance he managed at the face told him that Stark had, indeed, located Jane Foster. Dirty little secrets, Stark sing-songed. He stuck his hands in his pockets and rocked back and forth on his heels, smirking at Clint. It wasn't nearly as annoying as it should have been. From a distance, he heard a thin, strained, "Hello?" And Clint brought the phone up. "Hey, Doc," he said, and that was as far as he got. "Clint! Oh, God, Clint! Are you okay? I saw the news. It was all over the internet. I thought that was you. I saw you. Are you okay? Thor called and told me about, but he didn't have much time, and this is going to kill him. I don't know what he'll do, and I was so afraid about Eric that I didn't ask him about you." Clint blinked under the wash of words. "I'm fine," he said, and he realized both of his hands were cradling the phone against his cheek, holding it like a lifeline. "It's okay, thank you. It's just fine." There was a broken sound over the line, and he winced. "Doc, is Darcy there? Okay, take a deep breath. Don't cry. It's fine. It's all going to be fine. Selvig's just fine. He's okay. And so's Thor. Just, please don't cry." "Clint?" Darcy's voice was shaking. Just a little. But she could be counted upon to hold it together if Jane was falling apart. Just like Jane could face down the world if Darcy needed her to. They had that weird sister pact thing going on. Clint never understood it, but he respected it. "Clint, are you okay?" "I'm fine, really." He looked up, and Stark had pulled a tablet from God only knew where and was scribbling. "Here's the thing. Thor's gotta go, and we're running out of time. We want to see if we can get Jane back here long enough for him to see her, to see that she's okay, and she can see that he's okay, because..." "Loki," Darcy said, very soft and very angry. "Yeah." "Thor's got to get him off Earth," Clint said, and maybe someday his chest wouldn't seize up at that goddamn name. Not today, of course, but maybe someday. He took a deep breath. "Thor's got to go. We've got a narrow window. We're going to get him to the right place and get him gone, but we have We think we can get Jane back here. Stark held up the tablet, and Clint read through the information with a growing sort of respect. There's a private jet that's going to be waiting for you at the nearest airport in 20 minutes, he said, shaking his head. Fueled and ready. Can you get her in a car, like, now? We're already moving towards the door, Darcy said, and Clint grinned. That's my girl, he said. That ship has sailed. I offered, you turned me down, you're a heartless prick, go to hell, she said, and her voice was watery and warm and full of relief. Tell me, and don't you lie to me, I will know, I have magical girl powers, so you tell me right now, tell me you're okay. Clint sucked in a slow breath. I'm not, his lips twitched, but I'm getting there. He tossed the tablet back to Stark, who caught it with one hand and went right back to work. You're going to get an itinerary in about 5 minutes. Follow it. To the letter. I know to do what you tell me to when the sky is falling in. She paused. Thor and Eric are all right? Yes, he said. Get her here, and Thor'll be much, much better. Let's do this thing, she said, and Clint grinned at the phone. She sounded like she was arming herself against some unseen army. Maybe she was. Maybe that's what this was, what all of this was. All of them fighting an enemy that he couldn't fight any longer. He was so tired, he didn't even question it. Let's go, Darce. Move it. Yeah, yeah. Hey, wait. Clint? Is Coulson? He didn't make it. Clint cut her off with ruthless efficiency. There was a beat of a pause, and he sucked in a breath. He didn't make it. Otherwise, he'd be the one bringing us back. Yeah. Her voice was shaking, the vibration there in the words. But Jane needed her. As long as Jane needed her, Darcy could hold it together. Clint, I'm... Airport, he said. Now, move it. We're running out of time. Sir, yes, sir. And it wasn't mocking, not at all. He held on, listening, until the line went dead, and then he held on for a little while longer. When he finally offered the phone back to Stark, he'd been listening to the emptiness on the other end for a few minutes. Thanks, he said. Stark looked up, brown eyes sharp beneath the cuts and bruises. He shrugged. Yeah, well, someone's got to do it. He went back to his work. But he didn't seem surprised when Clint fell into step beside him. Now more than ever. Keep love alive, you know? He paused, his jaw locking tight. What's S.H.I.E.L.D. gonna do about Coulson's... He had, I don't know, Pepper said, a cellist? What? Confused, Clint glanced at him. A cellist? Stark's eyes darted up and back down. And that's what he said. Portland, I think. It was offhand, deliberately so, masking a deeper interest, but the strain was pushing him too hard for him to do a good job of hiding what he knew. Clint stared at him, puzzling through that. A cellist? It hit him like a bolt, sharp and hard, and nearly knocked him to his knees. His idea, his sarcastic little suggestion, when Phil had told him, with a weary voice, about Pepper Potts' kind and enthusiastic attempt to fix him up with a lovely woman from HR. Phil had been amused. Clint had found he wasn't. And in his socially inept manner, he'd shot his mouth off about making up a fake girlfriend, who worked with a beau. He didn't know how he did it, but Clint kept his body moving forward. Depends on if they were still... One hand came up, seesawing in the air. If he was still with her, I don't... He shook his head. If they broke up, I doubt S.H.I.E.L.D. would tell her anything. Stark's shoulders hunched forward, his face twisting. His fingers were white-knuckled on his phone. Yeah, he said, and there was a rough note to his voice. Did you know her name? Leave it alone, Stark, Clint told him. The words were swimming in him, soft and gentle. Some people would prefer not to know the people they once loved are dead, He started walking faster, knowing he was at his limit. It's a grace most of us are denied. Let her think he's still out there saving the world. Denial never helped anyone, Stark said. It helps the ones that don't know they're in denial. Let them keep that cold comfort. Stark wasn't walking anymore, and Clint headed up the hallway alone. He was glad. It was a relief to be alone. So how does this work? Do I have to lie on the couch? Not at all. Dr. O'Brien had a soft smile, which didn't do much to distract from her sharp eyes. You can sit wherever you would like. Or stand. She leaned back in her chair. Do you want this one? No, thanks. He paused. What would you have done if I'd said yes? She considered that, her fingers rolling over the barrel of a gold pen. It caught the light, glowing in her grip. Gotten up, she said at last. Clint let out a faint chuckle. Why? I prefer my patients to be comfortable, she said. It's better for both of us. He took a seat on the couch, because he was exhausted. He'd slept more than he'd ever thought he would, but it wasn't enough. What little sleep he'd gotten had been interrupted by nightmares that he didn't want to think about. Even waking to find Natasha, warm and comforting against his spine, hadn't done much to shake the sensation of horror. I don't think I'll ever be comfortable here, he admitted. He gave her a faint smirk. It doesn't really matter. It's not like I can change therapists. She folded her hands in her lap. Would you prefer that? She asked. It's all the same to me. He avoided looking at the window. I don't really care. I have to be here. Who's doing the note-taking doesn't much matter. Dr. O'Brien smiled. Ah, will I have to take notes? I had thought we were going to discuss birds. She waved a hand towards the end table. I found a copy of Sibley's guide. Found, she had. It wasn't a new purchase, either. The spine was creased, and the cover bent and battered. There was a slight warping to chunks of pages, the clear sign of someone caught in the rain with their book open and repeating the mistake. This was a book that had seen use, and in the field. Field journal, Clint said. You should always take notes about what you see. Needing to occupy his hands, he picked up the guide, letting it fall open between his palms. Otherwise, you might forget. Why birds? She asked. And her hands were occupied too, her pen clasped in one hand, held over the clean white sheets of a simple steno pad. He kept his gaze averted, but even at this distance, he could see the graceful, smooth rhythm of her writing. He could see the letters curl, one after another, across the sheet. Clint turned the pages idly, lingering on descriptions of hawks and eagles, on the hunters. If you spend any time in hiding, especially up high, or in secret, you'd better make friends with birds, he said at last. They're everywhere. Cities, forests, jungles, deserts. They like hidden nooks, and they move fast. They can draw attention you don't want, or they can be a very effective diversion. His fingers traced over the lines of a drawing. Make friends with your environment. Keeps you alive, and staves off the worst of the boredom. He let the book fall shut. Do you have a favorite? She asked. Are you going to psychoanalyze my choice? He shot back. Of course. Dr. O'Brien smiled at him. Then I think I'll keep that to myself. So you do have a favorite? Sure. He let his head fall back. Any other questions? How do you like your new team? That brought him up short. I don't have a team, Dr. O'Brien. His fingers flicked against the cover of the guide, sharper than he'd intended, and he worked at stilling them. There was a group of people who had a shared goal. That's done now. Really? He considered the question. The people. The circumstances. Yeah, I wasn't on the team. I was a last-minute addition. They let me tag along. He was grateful for that, for a small chance at redemption. And he resented the feeling that he was beholden to them. Why did you go then? if they weren't your team. Clint forced his fingers into a fist. At least then, he could hold them still. Because they were going in my direction, and I had skills they could use. Is that the only reason? He thought about it. About Natasha and Stark, Banner and Thor, and Rogers. Most of all, Rogers. God. The hours he'd spent listening to Phil babble on about Captain Goddamn Fucking America. It had been amusing at first, almost cute, to find out that his controlled, austere handler had a childish crush on Captain America, of all people. It had been cute until Rogers had resurfaced, literally. Then it hadn't been nearly so funny. Clint had put up with it, because God knows Phil put up with a lot of shit from him. But he'd started to grit his teeth at the merest mention of Steve Rogers. Damn Boy Scout. War hero. Upstanding hero. Perfect human being. It was a joke to Clint, the fact that he felt, on some level, that he was in a competition that he was never going to win. After all, he was a lot of things. But he wasn't even close to being in Captain America's league. He jammed Phil's cap t-shirt behind the dryer 2 weeks ago. If Phil had noticed it was missing, he hadn't brought it up. Now, of course, he never would. And Clint had proof positive that he never would have won that particular battle. Clint shook off the uncomfortable thought. That's the only reason I need. He shifted on the couch. Next question. Have a seat, Agent Barton. Clint considered the chair. It really wasn't worth the fight to stay standing. That had never stopped him before, of course, but he was tired, and he wasn't sure he cared. This had been the longest week of his life, and it wasn't getting any easier. Even with Natasha blunting whatever rough edges she could manage, he was barely holding on. He wasn't sleeping. Eating was a chore that he had to be reminded to suffer through. Even the act of getting dressed was so draining that if he wasn't desperately trying to keep up appearances, he doubted he would have bothered. Fury sighed, a gusty exhale that held a world of expiring patience. "I don't have time for this," he said, leaning forward. "Sit your ass down, agent." Clint sat. "Thank you," Fury said, and it wasn't nearly as sarcastic as Clint was expecting it to be, which made him very, very nervous. Fury folded his hands on his desk, his shoulders a hard line. "I've got a request for you." "Sir?" Clint couldn't quite hold back the word, because Fury didn't request, Fury ordered. "You're aware that the Asgardians have sent diplomatic overtures?" S.H.I.E.L.D. was all but howling with the news, and even if Natasha was keeping him out of sight for the most part, he heard things. Whether or not Thor had reappeared, he wasn't sure, but Asgard was attempting to mend the damage done. He nodded. "They've made a request," Fury said, "and it's not one that anyone likes. But right now, we've still got dead space dragons draped over the remains of Midtown, and we're not equipped to deal with that. We need them. It's not something I like to admit. It's sure as hell not something anyone wants to admit. But that's the reality of the situation, Agent Barton. So far, they've been very, very helpful, and there's only been one request from the diplomatic team." Clint stared him down, waiting for the shoe to drop. Fury took a deep breath. "They want to talk to you and Selvig. As the only two survivors of..." "No." The word was too loud, too sharp, and it hurt his throat. He swallowed. "No," he repeated, and it was a little more controlled. Not much, but a little. He'd take a little. It was all that he could manage. "I know," Fury said, his head cocking to the side. "Listen." "No," Clint said. "No, I won't. I can't." He swallowed hard. "No." "Selvig's already agreed," Fury said, his one eye sharp, penning Clint in place. There was a strain there, in his face, in the set of his shoulders, in the way he held himself. Clint studied him, wondering on some level if Nick Fury was actually that close to the loss of his control, close enough that the strain was visible through his ironclad control, or if he was letting Clint see something that wasn't real, a false front, another mask designed to manipulate Clint into doing just what Fury wanted him to do, or if he was always that close to the edge, and for once, Clint was close enough himself that he could recognize the precariousness of their perch. "We need you to do this," Fury said, his voice tired. "You know that." "Fuck you," Clint said. Fury arched an eyebrow. "This isn't a request from S.H.I.E.L.D.," he said, ignoring that entirely. "Or me. This is from the city of New York. We are still bleeding out, down there on street level. The damage is immense, which you know." Clint smirked at him, a distinct "fuck you" still hovering around his mouth. "Yeah, I was there." Fury came to his feet in a sustained rush, slamming both hands down on his desk. "Then do your goddamn part, agent. Sit in the goddamn room and have a goddamn conversation, because we don't have anyone else to send in there. You think I like putting my money down on this? You're a sucker bet right now, and you know it. The Asgardians won't meet with the president, with the UN, with anyone. You're it. You're about to stand as the representative of humanity, Barton." Clint choked on a laugh, high and hysterical and unsteady. "And just when I thought you couldn't make this situation sound less appealing, you pull that out. Wonderful. Thank you, sir. May I have another?" Fury's jaw worked, the muscles jumping. But when he spoke, his voice was calm and clipped, professional, in charge. "You need to do this, agent." Clint swallowed, and it tasted like metal and dust and ash. "Yes, sir." After a moment of consideration, watching Clint like a hawk, he subsided back into his seat. "We'll do everything we can to minimize the... Just tell me when and where, sir." His hand was jumping against his leg, his fingers spasming. He forced them into a fist and left it lying there against his thigh. "Is there anything else, sir?" Fury leaned back in his chair, his face unhappy. His head fell back as if he couldn't hold it up any longer. "How's therapy going?" "She's an Orioles fan, and we agree that Field of Dreams is a horrible movie. We know this because we've both watched it about 50 times. Clint forced a smirk onto his face. And it hurt. It hurt to force his face to accommodate it. He hated having to make the effort. He was out of energy, out of time. And he hurt, all over, down to the marrow of his bones. "So there's that." "There's that," Fury agreed. His fingers rolled against the desktop, and his mouth opened. He closed it without saying anything. With an audible breath, he reached for a file folder. "That'll be all, Agent Barton." Clint stood. "Thank you, sir." Natasha was waiting for him outside Fury's office. He wasn't surprised. He also wasn't surprised to see the back of Maria Hill striding away, her spine ramrod straight. Clint didn't slow down, and Natasha fell into place beside him. "What?" she asked, skipping anything resembling pleasantries. "I'm going into a closed meeting with the Asgardian delegation," he said, his steps going faster and faster. Natasha kept up with him. "Clint, are we okay with this?" "I don't know how you feel about it," he admitted, "but I'm about to throw up, so probably not." With that, he cut hard into the men's bathroom. Mercifully, it was empty, and he shot to the back stall, just in time to lose his lunch. By the time his stomach was empty, when he was reduced to dry heaves, he was shaking all over, his fingers scrambling against the gleaming tile of the floor. Too tired to get up, too afraid to stand, he just collapsed back against the wall, his head falling back with a thump. It was a struggle to breathe, and his mouth tasted like blood and bile and ash. He coughed, gagged. No matter what he did, no matter how much he drank or how hard he scrubbed, it was the taste of ash that he couldn't get out of his throat. The sound of heels on the tile was unexpected, and he ignored it anyway. The water ran in the sink, splashing and clear, and he folded his legs up in front of him, wishing that he could cry. A moment later, Natasha held a cup of water out in front of him. He told himself his hand was not shaking as he reached out to take it. After a quick rinse, he spared her a glance.
"You do realize this is the men's room, right?"
She leaned against the wall, her arms crossed over her chest. "You do realize I don't care, right?" He swished the rest of the water around his mouth and spat it out.
"I do. Just thought I'd call your attention to the fact."
He slumped back against the tiled wall, his legs slipping out as if he didn't have any control over them until they were a tangled heap on the floor.
"Is there anyone in the SHIELD hierarchy who would have the balls to tell me to leave?" Natasha asked.
She took the cup from him and crossed to the sink to refill it. Clint considered that.
"Fury?"
She snorted. "Like he uses a public bathroom." Clint grinned.
"Hell. If she's in here, I get to stay too. That's only fair."
Natasha handed him the cup. "Swallow this time. You're acting dehydrated again." He had the shakes, and they both knew it, and neither of them would ever acknowledge it aloud. His hand was steady enough to keep the water in the cup, steady enough to get the cup to his mouth. That was the best he could manage.
"Don't know if it'll stay down."
"That's okay. You've always had a weak stomach," Natasha said. "I'm used to it." Her hand ghosted over his hair, just stirring the tips, as if it was all the contact either of them could stand. Clint sipped the water, letting it linger on his tongue. It was a good excuse not to talk.
"You don't have to do this," Natasha said.
He swallowed.
"Yeah, I do."
He shoved himself to his feet, and Natasha's hand was there, on his elbow, on his arm, her grip firm and impersonal, and he loved her for it.
"And you know it."
"Yes," she met his eyes. "I was just making sure you did." Clint stared at her.
"Phil," he said, his lips twitching. "Phil would have had the balls to tell you to get out."
Her smile was sad and gentle.
"Phil," she said,
reaching up to put a cool palm against his forehead. "Wouldn't have bothered. He would have just raised an eyebrow and asked me why I was so determined to traumatize the whole of SHIELD." Clint choked on a laugh, and his head fell forward to rest on her shoulder.
"God damn," he said, as Natasha stroked his hair. "I miss this narky bastard."
Her lips brushed against his hair.
"I do too."
He wasn't sure what he was expecting. There were 10 of them, 9 warriors in full armor, and in their midst, seated at a simple, unadorned interrogation table, a single cloaked woman. Swathed in pale silk that settled around her like snow, she was nearly lost in the sea of silver and gold armor. Her face was hidden in the shadows of her cowl, but Clint had the sense that she was watching. Watching and seeing things that the others did not. Thor had been regal. Loki had been imposing. The Asgardian delegation was built for size, for intimidation, for spectacle. The SHIELD delegation was singularly unimpressed. Clint kind of liked that about SHIELD. They might well lose a fight, but they weren't going to preface that loss with anything less than the biggest screw you that they could manage. It wasn't always the smartest decision, but it was the one that he could put his weight behind. They may be fucked, but they'd go down swinging damn hard.
"You have brought us the afflicted one?"
the spokesman for the Asgardians asked, his voice ancient and bristling with hard edges. Clint's shoulders hunched, but he kept his head up, his face set in grim lines.
"Agent Barton," Fury said, not breaking his gaze from the armored figures. His hand rested easily on the butt of his gun, holstered as always on his hip. Despite that, his body language was relaxed, easy, open.
No more afflicted than I am, so let's not take that route right now, because he doesn't have to be here.
The warrior looked down the sharp blade of his nose at Fury, who shrugged.
Take it or leave it. You wanted to speak to him? He's here. So speak.
There was a moment of tense silence, vibrating between the solid black wall of shield personnel and the armored mass of the Asgardians. Clint watched, out of the corner of his eye, as Hill shifted her position, her hands open and ready at her sides. Natasha was on Fury's other side, her hands on her hips, her head tipped to the side.
That is not... one of the armored warriors began, his voice hot.
The robed figure seated at the table raised a hand, and the Asgardian delegation went silent.
Leave us.
The voice was feminine, almost delicate, but there was a thread of steel to it. The men in armor exchanged a glance, and the one who appeared to be the leader spoke up.
My lady, should anything happen to you?
It will not. She was amused. Clint could hear it in her voice, in the wry tone of her words.
I have long since been capable of protecting myself.
The gloved fingers, clad in delicate white silk, gestured towards the door.
You will leave us. I will speak to Agent Barton alone.
For an instant, no one moved, and she sighed, faint and soft.
Now, go.
The Asgardians stared at the shield personnel, and Clint couldn't take it anymore.
You're the one who wants to speak to me?
He asked the cloaked woman.
Yes.
Clint nodded.
Okay, we're fine, sir.
Natasha slid him a glance, and he flicked his head to the side.
Thank you, but if that's what she wants, I'm fine with it.
It is, she said, still and unmoving. I am unarmed, Agent Barton.
Great. Me too.
Fury was staring at him. Clint met his gaze with a shake of his head.
We both know what's riding on this meeting. If that's what she wants...
His voice trailed away, and he shrugged. Fury took a deep breath.
We'll be outside, Agent.
He tipped his head at the door, and the shield personnel turned as one. The Asgardians waited only a moment before following, the rattle of armor and weapons loud in the small space. The door closed behind them, and Clint turned to the robed figure, wondering if this was what it felt like to face an executioner.
Wanted to speak to me?
You are the one that was taken by the spear? The staff wielded by Loki? She asked. Clint's mouth tightened.
A lot of people were taken by that spear, ma'am. But if you mean, was I one of the ones brainwashed into being his puppet? The answer's yes. Why is that important?
It is important, the robed figure said, delicate hands reaching up to push the cowl of her cloak back. Because he is my son. She was slight and fine of feature, her hair coiled and an elaborate coif around her finely shaped head. Her face was pale, her eyes clear, her lips curved in the slightest, saddest smile that he had ever seen. There was something to her, something beyond regal, beyond beauty, that terrified him. Thor had been unearthly. Loki had been alien. This woman was something else entirely, more than both of them. I am Frigga, she said, and her voice was beautiful. Wife of Odin Allfather, mother to Loki and Thor. Clint stared at her, his breath seizing in his lungs. She smiled, just a little, but her eyes were sad and clear. Hello, Agent Barton, she said, rising from her seat. There was a grace to her that turned his stomach to ice, an unreasonable fear gripping him with sharp talons. Thank you for agreeing to meet with me.
Thank you, ma'am. Your Majesty?
He paused, his weight shifting as he tried to hold himself still. It was a battle he wasn't winning.
I'm sorry.
I don't know how to address you.
Her lips curled up again, soft and gentle. You may address me as you like, she said. You are not one of my people. You owe me no allegiance and no reverence.
Her hands came together in front of her, delicate fingers weaving together.
I am called Frigga. That is well enough, should it please you.
I don't think that's a good idea, ma'am, he said, because she was cold and fine and beautiful, but she was not one to be taken lightly.
Her perfect, sad smile wavered, but did not disappear.
As you wish. How shall I address you? She lowered herself back into the chair, her skirt settling around her legs. She waved at the other chair, just out of reach, out of touch. Clint took it, feeling awkward and ungainly.
Clint's fine, ma'am.
Frigga nodded.
Thank you. Her hands were still folded, resting easy now on her lap, against the fabric of her skirt. She studied them for a moment, her head ducked. I have come to bear our regrets for the actions of my son. In the stillness that followed the words, she raised her chin, pride and pain in the flex of her neck. What he has done? These are things we will never be able to make amends for. But I seek to offer you what reparations that I can, to ease this sin from us.
Why? Clint asked.
The words seemed to be coming from a great distance.
What difference does it make?
He is a prince of Asgard, she said. Her eyes closed, just for an instant, as if she was too tired to hold them open any longer. And he made war upon your world, brought death and suffering and pain, opened you to a force that should never have set foot here. She paused, her breathing slow and deep. His actions shame us all, for all of us had a hand in what has happened.
That's the thing, Clint said. Too tired to be diplomatic. Too tired to care. Shield knew what they were getting when they sent him in here. He did this. Not you. Not anyone else. And there's nothing for you to make amends for. Nothing you can make amends for.
He stood, sharp and jerky, his muscles vibrating with a repressed need to do something. Anything. Everything.
It's his crime. Not yours.
She didn't move, didn't flinch. He is my son, she said. She looked at him, her chin held level, her eyes clear. His crimes weigh heavily upon me.
Why?
Clint sucked in a breath, and another, his chest hurting with the force of it.
He's not even...
And this woman, this goddess, was not his enemy. He knew that. The odd thing was, he found himself truly opposed to hurting her, no matter how easy it might be to do.
Thor said that he was adopted.
Her smile was slight and sad. He was but a babe in arms when Odin brought him to my care. I am the only mother he's known, and for all that he is not of my line, he is my son. Regal and commanding, she stared Clint down. He is my son, and it is in my keeping that he remains, even now.
Clint choked on a laugh. He made his choices, and they had nothing to do with you, or Asgard, or even me, or any person on Earth. He wanted to bring death and destruction, and he did. And he would again if you let him loose, and I should have shot him when I had the chance.
Frigga flinched, the tiniest shudder in her frame. Thank you for not doing so.
Why do you care? Clint asked. It would have lifted the burden from you and your people if he'd died in the war he'd made.
He is my son, Frigga said. I shall always be happy that he lives. I am always happy that he returns home to me, to our people. And were I a better mother, then he would have trusted in that. He would have known. Her voice trailed away. His crimes are unspeakable. I realize that. I seek not to make you understand him. I offer you no excuse. His heart,
I fear, was turned somewhere along the way, down a path that I could not follow. But I am his mother, and I love him with all of my heart.
Do you know what he said to me? Clint asked.
He was shaking all over, his whole body vibrating.
The last words I remember?
He glanced up, meeting her eyes, and he wanted to hate her. He ached for that. He wanted to hate all of them, and he hated himself for failing.
He said, "You have heart." His face twisted.
He said, "You have heart," and then he ripped it out of me. His fingers closed over the front of his shirt, clawing at the fabric, trying desperately to find a grip.
"You have heart. Well, I don't. Not any longer. He took it from me."
"He took it out of me," he said, and it should have been a scream, but it wasn't. All the force that he could muster, and it was a broken little whisper, a sob rather than a howl. "He took my heart, and he twisted it to his use. He turned me into a weapon, into a fucking nightmare." His breath was shuddering in his chest.
"You want to make amends? You want to make this right?"
She was so sad, her eyes blank and empty.
"Yes."
"Then give me back my heart." Clint wrenched his fingers away from his chest, forcing them down.
"You want to fix this? Then make me whole again and get me my fu—"
He stopped, swallowing the word, swallowing all the emotion behind it. Exhausted, too tired to stand, let alone move, he closed his eyes.
"Make me whole before they bury me. Give me back my heart."
"If I had the power, I would give you mine," she said.
Clint choked on a laugh. "You know what, ma'am?"
He stood, because he was tired, and because he couldn't sit here any longer without screaming or sobbing, and he still had a bit of pride left in him.
"I believe you."
Her lips twitched, an attempt, a valiant attempt, but it ended in failure. "Agent Barton?"
"Yes, ma'am."
She took a breath and released it, slow and careful. "May I weep for you?"
Clint stared at her. "Why? What good do tears do?" he asked, when he could find words again.
"None at all," she admitted, and her smile went a bit wider, a bit deeper. A tear slid down the perfect curve of her cheek. "And yet, I cannot seem to make them stop." Her eyes closed, and the tears didn't slow. She made no move to hide them. She didn't duck her head or cover her face, and when her eyes opened again, her gaze was sharp. "My sons have no need for them either."
Clint scrubbed a hand over his face. "I don't..." He shook his head. "Do what you want."
"It has little enough to do with what I want," she said. "I want many things. I am unlikely to get any of them." She stood, lithe and graceful and ageless. "Thank you for seeing me, Agent Barton." She paused, and she was still crying, shaken, silent and calm. "Will you speak to me again?" He felt raw, like he was bleeding or numb. But he met her eyes and wondered if that was better. At least it was something.
"Yeah, just..."
He turned away, because he couldn't do anything about it, about any of it.
"Just tell S.H.I.E.L.D. They'll get me."
"Will you be here?" she asked. Clint stared at her tear-stained cheeks, at her sad smile.
"I don't know."
She moved towards him, and it was all he could do to stand his ground. She made no move to touch him, but she was within reach. "He took your heart," she said, her voice gentle and kind, so inordinately kind. "Because it is strong and loyal. You have a warrior's heart, and that is common enough. But there is something else, some reason he chose you from those who were there. Her hand came up, her fingers stopped just short of his cheek, and he flinched away, panic and fear clawing at the edges of his mind. She didn't pull back, and she didn't touch him. "You persevere," she whispered. "You have the will for that, for survival, and an amazing capacity for..."
"Stop!"
Clint took a step back. Just one. It felt like a retreat. It felt like he was fighting to live. He wasn't sure which it was, or if it was both.
"Don't."
She nodded, just a dip of her chin. "I regret if my words have caused you pain, Agent Barton." She lowered her hand back to her side. "I shall call upon you again, if you permit it."
"Yes, ma'am," he said, because that was all there was to be said. That was all he had left in him to say.